What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. This is episode number 100, and we're excited to be debuting our brand new segment format on today's episode. We're going to be joined by Fierce Fighting Championship dual weight champion Desmond Monabat. Plus, we'll be discussing UFC Vegas Font versus Garbrandt results, Bellator 259 results, and plus we're going to have this week's news outside the cage and a breakdown of all the hot boxing action. Before we dive into all of that, though, grab your weed and fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
Ooh, I like this pipe. It's mine. I'm going to brag on it a little bit for those of you on screen. Those of you that watch us, you know I've been without pipes and bongs for a minute because I broke them all like a typical stoner. So I got this little Sherlock bubbler here. And today we have Mob Boss, which we've had for a minute. And Paul, you brought over some what?
Do-si-do.
Do-si-do. Do-si-do is Face-Off OG crossed with OGKB. Which is, I find a little interesting because both of those, the OGKB is a Girl Scout Cookies phenotype. Mm-hmm. And the Face-Off OG is an OG Kush phenotype. Mm. So it's just basically a phenotype cross, which is a little interesting. My boss is Kim Doll crossed with Tang Tang. We've discussed this one on the show before. We also have some Tropicana Cookies Wax for our PAX 3 today. And we were hitting this nice little dab rig before the show as well. Well, I'm going to hit this. What did you think of this? This is the Do-si-do. You've been smoking on it a minute. Do you like it?
Yeah, I like it. It's got real, like, real fat-ass nugs, so it's nice and dense when you break it down, but it breaks down nice.
I like dense nuggets. I prefer that. I like dense, hard nuggets.
Yeah.
I know some people don't. They prefer the, like, the light, fluffy kind, but I find, especially when you roll it in a fucking, in a joint.
Yeah.
Then it's got, a lot more of a longer burn time. Well, whatever you're smoking on, folks, we hope that it's delicious and hopefully legal wherever you are or soon to be legal. But let us go ahead and get started with the
weekly wrap-up.
All right, on this week's weekly wrap-up, Paul, let's get started with the big dog of the weekend, which was, of course, UFC Fight Night Vegas number 650-something. No, I think it was number 27 or 28, but it was the Rob Font versus Cody Garbrandt card. Overall, I thought it was pretty decent, but let's get started with the main event because I think that was surprising. I wasn't surprised that Font won, but I was kind of surprised how dominant he was. What did you think, Paul? As you're firing up this Do-si-do blunt.
Here's the thing. I agree with you later in the fight, but I do think early in the fight, there was this tendency for Cody Garbrandt to like kind of look for the counter constantly throughout the fight, and he kept doing this thing where like Font was able to really use his striking to back him up on the cage because he was more than willing to go to the cage, kind of looking for that, like, I hate to use this as a comparison, but kind of like Tyron Woodley. I know they're not similar fighters, but, like, Tyron Woodley used to do the same thing where, you know, like, he'd kind of let you walk him down, but in reality what he's doing is letting you walk him down to the cage and then try to explode off the cage.
Yeah, he's looking to counter and then explode forward
seemed
and
like
coming in.
Cody
yeah.
was trying to do that a lot, and Rob was just able to not get hit. It was really what was happening. Because, like, the first two rounds I thought were pretty darn close.
I did too, and even though Cody lost, I do want to say I was really impressed with him early in the fight because he took some shots and he didn't lose his cool. Which, if you've studied his career in the UFC at all, you know that's what happened is, or what happens in the past is, he'll be doing great in a fight, then he gets smacked a good one, and then he kind of loses his cool and just starts winging it, and he wants to brawl. and that's usually led to his defense is coming down and his chin up a bit and he's gotten KO'd. That did not happen in this fight, and it could have. There was multiple instances where he could have reacted that way, but he showed he's clearly overcome that.
However, and he even tried to mix it up with the wrestling too, which we talked about. Like, you know, this guy's a state champion wrestler, college wrestler also, and like for him to really never use his wrestling. Obviously, Rob Font was able to kind of defend it off later in the fight, but I thought early he was doing pretty well.
He had 4 takedowns in the first 2 rounds, which is more takedowns than he had had in his UFC career prior to that. He'd had a grand total of 3.
Yep.
It's like you just said, it's something that he's never chosen to utilize, which has been in his toolkit.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a bummer to see him fix the hole, apparently, in his game where he was losing his cool a bit and getting knocked out and implement wrestling and then still lose the fight. But he's fighting a guy who's really, really good, who I want to talk about for a second because he has been flying under the radar for years. Rob Font's clearly.
Well, just real quick, though. I think it's not as big of like a notch like against Cody that like, oh, you put it all together and you still weren't able to win. I think it speaks more to just how freaking talented the 135-pound division is right now. Like, that's – like, want to talk about Shark Tanks. Like, literally, look at the top – any of the top 5, 6, maybe even up to the top 10 could literally has the talent to be a champion in the UFC, without a doubt. Go completely down the list. Talking Peter Yan, Sterling, fucking Dominic Cruz, freaking – TJ Dillashaw, Sanhagen, Marlon Moraes, like all these guys.
Munoz, Aldo.
Yeah. All like,
you got the young killers coming up like O'Malley.
Yeah. And even a guy like freaking Chito Vera, who's just like, if he was in any other weight class, he would be in the top 15. Those kind of guys where it's just like Cody Garbrandt is at hit a point where it's not necessarily that he's doing something wrong. It's just that this division is just constantly evolving, and is young, just all these young guys coming up.
Well, Rob Font's not a young guy, though. That's what I find interesting about him. But, I mean,
in his career, young.
But let's talk about him now, because, yep, it's a Shark Tank, but the shark that is in focus right now is the guy who just beat a former world champion who had never had any sports history, no combat sports history whatsoever until 20 years old. He was not a high school athlete. He's not a high school wrestler. He wasn't a Golden Gloves boxer. He was a pizza delivery guy when he was 20 who delivered some pizzas to some guys who were practicing jiu-jitsu in their garage with the garage door open. Gets intrigued by what he sees, and now 10 years later, he just beat the former champion in the UFC in the main event. I think it's an amazing story because Rob Font is clearly talented.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fighting a guy who does have that background, who, like we just mentioned, was a high school wrestler, who has a Golden Gloves background, whose boxing is so, at one point, was considered so top-notch. I mean, they were talking about him, you know, going over and crossing over and doing boxing, et cetera. Yeah. And he just got beat by a guy who didn't pick up a boxing glove until he was probably 21. I mean, if he started in jiu-jitsu, you know, it's really, really impressive. And I think we have to give just a round of applause to Rob Font for coming through in his big moment. Like, he's been there, but this was his moment to shine, and man, he did it quite handily.
Yeah. And you know what? I think he's a tough puzzle to crack, too, because, like, the way he just uses his jab and pace and is just always in your face, it's very similar to Yan, honestly. Like, him and Yan have, like, as far as, like, pressure games, I feel like they're very similar. Like, their striking is, I'm going to walk you down, and if you try to come back at me, I'm just going to pepper you with my jab until you come in, and then I'm going to land my big shots.
Yes, that is very similar to his style. And it was very effective. I mean, Garbrandt knows how to move. He was doing well, but he just lost to a better fighter.
Yeah.
You know, this wasn't a case of Garbrandt making mistakes, which you can look back and say that in several of his losses. But this, he fought someone who was simply better, and I don't think he underestimated him, but I think afterwards, you know, he sounded very frustrated and emotional. I don't think that he was expecting – no one is expecting to lose, but I don't think he was expecting to lose like that to someone like Rob Font, who he probably viewed just like I mentioned before. I mean, he's a good fighter, but But look, I'm a state champ. I'm a former champion. I'm a high school wrestler. I'm a Golden Gloves boxer. I'm going to whoop this dude's ass.
Yeah,
and instead, he got schooled up, and he seems a little shook by it.
Well, I do think a big thing is, too, I don't really understand what Cody is still fighting at this weight class for. Because supposedly, he was like waiting in the wings for that 125-pound, you know, rematch winner. So, I don't necessarily know why he's still fighting the second and third. I get the whole, I could be like a double champ and all that shit. But if you have plans to move to a weight class, you haven't fought there, and you're just like, you know, ultimately still taking on all these guys at 135 pounds and trying to chase the 135-pound title, then you got to kind of make a decision if you're Cody Garber.
Well, he said before this fight that if he beat Rob, that he felt that that earned him a title shot in both weight classes.
Yeah.
That he should be able to fight for both titles.
Yeah, I remember that. And that's why I'm saying that.
That's crazy.
Is I just think it maybe moving down to 25, taking a fight, and then getting a title shot makes sense just because it's, like, you know, the stature he holds as far as, like, in the UFC. But I don't know. It's tough. It's really tough.
I don't know what's next for Cody. What's next for Rob either, because the division's just kind of in a...
I think Peter Yan versus Rob Font interim title fight makes a lot of sense.
I could get with that, but then what do you do with Sandhagen?
Well, he still has to fight Dillashaw.
And, I'm sorry, yeah, I was just scratching my nose. It was Sandhagen and Dillashaw.
Well, that's the thing. Is
I mean,
like,
how is that not the interim title fight? I mean, since, yeah, he got caught cheating, but he never lost the title, it kind of makes some sense for Dillashaw to fight for an interim belt.
Yeah, but Peter Yan was Rob cheating, Font. Got caught.
Yeah,
they both are
that.
Cheaters who got caught and lost the title. You really look at it.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
Don't know. It's just tough because, like, yeah, I agree with you. Like, Sandhagen's win over Moraes was big, but Font's win over freaking your boy Cody is
And before that, Font beat Moraes as well. He TKO'd him.
Yeah.
And before that, he had a decision win over Ricky Simon, and then he had a decision win over Sergio Pettis, which carries a little bit more weight now than it did at the time, considering Pettis is now the champ over in Bellator in that weight class.
True.
So,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't that long ago. It was 2018, so it's not like it was that long ago he beat Pettis. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's an interesting dilemma to have. I guess we'll see how it plays out. As far as Garbrandt, I mean, he's doing the right things. He left Alpha Male part-time.
Yeah.
You know, it tried to add to his striking, tried to add to a bit more with some other coaches. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good move. He's done the right things. He just can't let this fight screw with his head too much.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's what I worry about with him.
Well, you know what it's going to be? You know what, like we were talking about before, is like what's really tough for him is probably that he put all that together and he still wasn't able to win, you know? That's probably why he's so dumbfounded by it, because like all those knocks that people always gave him that, you know, he was too wild, he was this, he was that, he was everything. He fixed them. But on the defensive side, he just got battered.
Dude, like Rob's on the offensive striker.
Yeah, on the offensive side, Cody did well. But on the defensive side of things, he was just got battered.
Font's got an iron chin too. I mean, he took some shots. That's but another, exciting fight.
But
though.
That's the thing, though. That's always another thing I was impressed with was Cody's chin, because everyone always said after those like three knockouts, Cody's got no chin now.
Yeah.
And it looked like he has his chin to me. He's went five rounds.
Held up fine. I worry about his chin with this cut down to 25. I'm not really with that move. I'd be more behind a move up than a move down.
He's small, dude.
He's 5'8".
Yeah, but like his physically, he's small. Like you remember watching the Ultimate Fighter and all, like he looks like he's got a smaller build.
Yeah, he does have short arms and whatnot.
Yeah, like I think he would do well at 125.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what he does. There was another fight on there that I actually liked a lot better than this one, though. What did you think of the Carla Esparza?
Yeah.
Victory.
Yeah, against
Yan.
Yan. I don't know.
That was an amazing fight.
Her last name is really hard to pronounce.
We'll just call her Yan.
Yeah. But yeah, Carla came out and looked like a world beater.
I mean, she's 115-pound women's strawweight division. Mm-hmm. Carla being the former champ. You know, this puts together a really interesting history for those listening that might not know. Let me hit this joint here.
Well, there was. Give it even more backstory, though, because this goes back months, actually. People don't realize.
Well, I was going to go back to the beginning of the division.
Well, yeah, I know that. But I'm saying, like, for both sides of this, not only the Rose and Carla side, but on the other side of it, the UFC almost passed up Rose. Remember how they were having problems with Rose and Wei Li Zhang booking that fight, right?
Yes.
They were talking about possibly before this was pre-pandemic, so this was a while ago. They were talking about doing that. Remember how they were going to have that super card in China and they wanted her to be the main event? They were going to do her and Yan, two Chinese fighters in China for the belt. And then Rose steps in, wins that fight. So then that's what makes this Carla fight that title eliminated, because they were giving her a title shot. Then Carla puts two wins together while she was sitting on the sidelines waiting for a title shot, forcing this title eliminator this last Saturday. Which is,
well, now it's set up where Carla looks like she's next in line for Rose, which is a very interesting fight, which dates all the way back to
the
beginning of this division in the UFC, which was started on the Ultimate Fighter. They held the Ultimate Fighter to determine the two that were going to fight for the belt. It wound up being Rose and Carla fighting for the belt off of that show, where Rose loses.
Yep.
Carla's the champ, but then along comes Joanna Young Jacek, not on the show, and mops the fucking floor all over the place, and then reigns on the division, you know, for five fights after that before she loses the title. And to Rose. Like, Rose comes in, KOs her.
Then beats her by decision, which was even crazier.
Yeah, then beats her in a rematch to solidify that, which is just amazing. So Nama Yunus really comes into her own.
Yeah.
And then we've got Nama Yunus. Well, we've got Carla losing a few fights. Carla goes through some rough times. She actually has to post her motorcycle that she won from the Ultimate Fighter for sale, because she's not making any money and she can't get any fights. Like, she's going through a rough patch.
Well, and she got beat up pretty bad by Joanna in that title fight. So, like,
she did. People, she got murked.
Well, and here's the thing: is like, people just didn't want to fight her because she's a wrestler, and all she does is take you down and beat you up. And we saw on Saturday what happens when she gets your hands on someone. You know what I mean? She literally just dominated on the ground. And ultimately, that's how she beat Rose the first time. The first time she beat Rose, she choked her out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Took her back and choked her out. So,
well, after her loss to Young Jacek, you know, she bounces back with the win against Julia Lima, but then she loses a split decision to Randa Markos, right?
Yeah.
Then she pulls off a couple of good wins, including Cynthia Cavillo, although she was real young at the time.
Yeah.
But then she loses to Clyde Gadelha and then just gets out-wrestled and then TKO by Tatiana Suarez, which is tough. It's like, okay.
Yeah,
I mean, all right, now what? But then she beats she rattles off like four in a row, including wins over Alexa Grasso, Michelle Watterson, and then Marina Rodriguez, and then now over Jan, and just looks really strong in this last one. Where now she's going to fight Rose again, who wins the title back, the first woman ever to win the title a second time.
Although Dana said he's still splitting hairs, he might run the rematch.
Oh, fucking Dana. Yeah.
Let's just be honest. We're setting a great story for it, but the UFC doesn't
everything
see
everything is lined up for Carla Esparza versus Rose Nami Yunus.
100%.
That fight was
you.
Nowhere near deserving of a rematch.
100%.
And Wei Li Zhang was not some long-time dominant champion.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with
you. He just sees a China dollars, which pisses
me
off.
He just wants the money.
But
it's the money.
It's... God, you don't think that's going to play if you fools learned how to market it right?
That's what
There's
I'm saying.
There's a great
they totally,
story
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's a good story.
And it's like a women's story, which is important in this current day and age. Like, come on,
the comeback
man.
Comeback season.
Like, because if Carla wins the title again, guess who just becomes the second woman to ever win the title back twice in the UFC?
Carla
Esparza.
Yeah.
Like it's an amazing little thing
it,
they have
yeah,
going on.
Yeah, it would be
on.
A
Let's
crazy
hope.
Turn of events.
It's
sure.
a great story. I really like both of them. Like, they're basically two of my favorite fighters in the division. I've been a Nama Yunus fan for a long time, and I mean, your brother has like a history with Carla Esparza.
Yeah,
right?
He was on the. They were both wrestling at Menlo College, so like she was on the women's team. Obviously, he's on the men's team, but yeah, he's known her for years.
And so we end the show, we feel a little bit of more of affinity with her because of that as well.
Yeah.
But, dude, I think she threw 108 strikes in the first round.
It was nasty. She couldn't handle it. As soon as she got that crucifix position, it was over. There was nothing she could do about it.
Immediate takedown and mauling.
Yeah.
It was really impressive. Lots of blood. She opened up Jan's forehead with a nasty, nasty gash. Real nasty.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to keep pummeling it. So kudos to Carla Esparza. Hell of a performance. I really hope that earns her that title shot. It's like four or five in a row in that division for her. Now let's see. One, two, three, four. That's five in a row.
Yeah. Fuck, that's man. Where is Tatiana Suarez?
I have no idea.
She's still dealing with, like, that neck injury?
She must be.
When was her last fight?
Tatiana Suarez's last fight was... Jeez. UFC 238, June 8th of 2019. And she beat Nina Ansaroff by decision. And then before that, it was Carla Esparza by TKO, the one we talked about before, which was September. Don't know what's going on with her. It must be that neck injury. I haven't heard anything else on it.
Yeah.
And there's no information really readily available online. But that was a really exciting fight. For those people that say that women's MMA is boring or that wrestlers are boring, I would encourage you to watch that fight. That wasn't boring. It was women's MMA, and it featured some wrestling, and it was very impressive.
Yeah.
It's good stuff, man. What was that other fight you wanted to talk about in there?
And then also we had Jack Hermanson taking on Edmund Shahbazyan, and this was a reschedule. It's actually supposed to be on last weekend, 2 weekends ago, the pay-per-view, and it fell out. But it was like kind of the same thing we saw in the Derek Brunson fight all over again for Shahbazyan, and a lot of wrestling that he couldn't really defend very well, and he got beat up on top.
Yeah, it was a pretty one-sided beatdown.
10-8 in the third round.
Yeah. 10-8. It was 19-19 going into the third on most people's scorecards.
Yeah, and then he gets 10-8.
And then he just got mauled.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't stop the takedowns and the ground and pound, which Hermanson had plenty of.
Well, yeah, and like, now for Jack, that's, what, three wins in a row. And, I mean, at a weight class like middleweight where, you know, a lot of people have fought the champion and you haven't fought the champion, you know, putting a string of wins together could get you a title shot.
It certainly can. I mean, I don't know how keen everybody's going to be on yet another rematch after the Vittori rematch if Adesanya wins. But we'll see.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, a rematch against Vittori. Hermanson looking good, though. A rematch against Whitaker and then a rematch. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, a fresh face sometimes gets put to the top just because the people, you know, builds a little bit more excitement.
Yeah, for sure. As for the rest of the card, decent fights, but nothing we really want to talk about, especially when Bellator had some pretty good action.
Yeah.
What was that one headlined by?
That was Cyborg versus Leslie Smith, number two. Cyborg gets the TKO win.
You know,
I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
No, nothing against Leslie Smith, but we all kind of figured that would happen. She's tough. I mean,
she's tough, yeah.
You know.
But Cyborg is still top. I wouldn't say she's still in her prime, but she's still at the top of her game.
Not in her prime. But she does get the TKO, and she calls out Kat Zingano afterwards, which I like that fight. Kat seems to have righted the ship a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I also
called out Kayla Harrison, saying that she wants Bellator to sign Kayla Harrison so she could fight her.
Kayla, after another year in PFL experience, I don't think she wants that smoke. Honestly.
I don't think so.
I think what happens there is Kayla Harrison makes her name off of Cyborg.
Good.
That's her entry to the big time.
As long
as
the UFC doesn't sweep her up first.
Shit, I think she might try to sign a one- or two-deal fight with Bellator just to get that Cyborg fight and then go in the UFC after that.
Yeah, it makes
sense. I mean, that'd be pretty smart because I don't think Cyborg can handle that. It'd be the passing of the torch.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, ultimately, yeah.
I mean, she'll have at least, what, three more fights this year? Kayla, two, depending on how she does?
Yeah, I think two or three. Yeah, she's just constantly getting better. You know?
Right. Kayla's going to go over to Bellator or UFC, and then Clarissa Shields is going to wind up ruling the women's division in PFL for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Probably do something similar. Or if by some, maybe it goes the other way. Maybe Cyborg knocks out Kayla and waits for Clarissa Shields to come along. Who knows?
That too. That could happen.
But she looked good. I like the Zingano fight.
Yeah, I like Kat Zingano with Cyborg next. It makes a lot of sense.
Kat's really tough. I'd be rooting for her, but I mean, that's a tough out.
It is. Maybe like Kat Zingano in her prime. That's a much better. These two are in their prime. Who knows what happens? But these two at this point in both their careers, I think Cyborg gets the win there too.
Probably.
Well,
dude, what about that Darren Caldwell Higo rematch?
Yeah, fucking. I'm sorry, dude. I think Caldwell's had some good wins since he's lost both belts to Horiguchi, but I think that fight like ultimately changed him, man. Like, I just don't see the fire in him anymore. Like, so
I thought he'd have it this time too. I thought he was gonna pull it off.
I thought this was
man.
Gonna be a pretty good win for him, but it just turned into a disappointing fight. Nope. I mean, nothing against Leandro Higo, but like Darren Caldwell is a former champion that. You know, it's just stupid.
He seems to have lost the fire.
And I'm a huge fan of his from, like, way back when he was a college wrestler and stuff, so it kind of pisses me off when he, like, gets fucking just, like, sends it in like that. Because now, like, I know it was, like, a cool, you know, submission.
Well, describe it for the people that listen and that didn't see it.
Well, hold on.
Like, what
happened? Real quick. Like, when he lost to AJ McKee and, like, he had that weird submission, remember? It was like, everyone
McKee,
was like,
yeah.
Everyone was like, it was a weird neck crank. But then, like, after a lot of people were like, yeah, it was a weird neck crank, but I don't know why he tapped so quick. So, like, that kind of made me think, like, you know, like, that's kind of weird. And then in this fight, he was just, like, every exchange, he was just, like, losing. Like, you know what I mean? It was one of those things, like, it was like a competitive fight, don't get me wrong, but it just seemed like he had sent it in. Like, you know what I mean? Like, guys, when they get later in their careers and they, like, fall off that path, I feel like, you know, sometimes they're just like,
they're just dialing it in. They're just there
going through the motions. I'm fighting, but, like, right. I don't know if that fire is there for him anymore.
That's the way I felt watching it, that just wasn't there anymore for him either. So, we'll see what's next for him.
Yeah.
What about?
And then, Valerie Laredo also suffered her first pro loss over the weekend.
That was tough.
To Hannah Guy.
Hannah Guy, who she was.
It was a competitive fight, though. It wasn't like she got destroyed. It was, ultimately, what it came down to was that armbar.
Yeah, well, she got snatched up in an armbar and then stayed in it for
3 minutes and then fought the rest of the fight after the round. Like, you know
quite.
What I mean?
I mean, how bad is the injury to her arm?
Supposedly it's broken, but I don't know.
So she stays in an armbar for that long, guts it out, fights the rest of the fight.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to compare her necessarily, but it sounds similar to stuff Paige VanZant did with her arm.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
There's a odd parallel there that's unimportant. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, but yeah,
I think Laredo has a lot more skill than Paige does, or a lot more potential, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a talented woman. She's got that taekwondo of hers is legit.
Mm-hmm.
I always root for people with a heavy taekwondo background to be able to make the transition and find a way to implement the game into mixed martial arts with success. Like Anthony Pettis did for a while, but then not so much anymore.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? It's a hard style to have success with in mixed martial arts. But she loses. She showed a lot of guts, though. I don't think it's that big a deal for her career in the long run.
She's only like 26, isn't she?
Yeah, and she's just got a handful of fights. You know, it's fine. You're not going to remain undefeated. It's ultra rare.
Yeah.
So she seems fine in defeat. She seemed to be handling it fine. She was herself on social media afterwards. She showed a lot of heart, you know, a lot of guts.
Yeah.
That's real fighter shit.
That's the thing is, like, the transition. That's why I feel like Bellator, sometimes the transition's the right way to do it. Because, like, you know, you get some of those, like, fights that I feel like will mold the rest of your career. Maybe this will be one for her, you know. Like, she obviously has got to work on her ground game. And then from there, we'll see where it goes, you know.
I think if you got the mental toughness to ride that out, I think you've got the mental toughness to learn and grow from it still at her young stage. I expect her to come back and look really good after that. So, impressive in defeat.
Yeah.
You know what fight I really liked and was impressed by? Speaking of Paige VanZant, how about Mr. VanZant, Austin Vanderford? He fought on the card, didn't he?
Yeah, he fought Fabian Edwards. That's Leon Scott's brother.
Bloody that fool up, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, both of them were bloody. That shit was nuts.
A mess.
The bloodbath, but I thought Vanderford really, like, I feel like now he really put a stamp on the division that, like, he's the next up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's at 85, isn't it? It's 185 in Bellator. And he might be an interesting fight for Gegard Mousasi. Mm-hmm. I mean, he certainly seems to be tough. I joke, we call him Mr. VanZant. I mean, just playing around. Dude's a legit fighter.
He's legit as fuck.
I would like that fight.
Yeah. And I think what people are really like, he's so good on his ground game, but, like, he's good on both ends of his ground game. Like, he's good on the grappling side, but also he has good submissions and good, like, you know, like, he does a lot of those submission undergrounds, a lot of, like, the submission matches and shit like that. So, you know, he's got, like, yeah. So, you know, he's, like, he's willing to, you know, roll with some of the, you know, best talent in the world just based from his wrestling background, you know what I mean? So, he's a pretty solid prospect. I think the UFC ultimately is kicking themselves for passing on him on the Contender Series.
Yeah, that was a bad move maybe, but good for Vanderford because I think it's better for him in the long run. He goes to Bellator. Let's say he beats Mousasi, becomes champ over there, reigns for a little while, runs his contract out, then goes over to UFC. He's going to probably stack a little bit of cash in the bank through sponsors and whatnot, and then have more of a name. He won't necessarily just be known as Mr. VanZant then. He'll be Austin Vanderford, Bellator champion.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? To the vast majority of people.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, Paige's husband, that guy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's how the casual hears it.
Yeah.
Instead, he's Bellator champ. I would think that'd be a good thing.
I kind of think they've been scorned by the UFC because now, you know, his wife gets released from the UFC. He gets, you know, doesn't get picked up.
Oh, that could be. I don't know.
Could stick with Bellator.
That's predicting a lot of ifs. I mean, if he beats Gegard Mousasi, that's a tough task
in
front
of
anybody.
Sure.
We're just hypothetically speaking here.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that about wraps up the Bellator 259.
That about wraps up the mixed martial arts for this weekend, which is going to bring us to our boxing breakdown. Dude, we had a pretty important fight here and some interesting news pop off this week in boxing, Paul.
Yeah.
An important fight is going to be, of course, the 140-pound unification bout between Joshua Taylor and Ramirez, where we see Taylor get the decision and unify all four belts in the 140-pound division, which is a monumental task that he deserves a lot of respect for.
Absolutely.
I mean, how many people have done that in the modern era, Paul?
I think it said like seven or something.
Yeah, and that's if you count the weird situation.
I think it's six, seven if you count with Lopez.
Teofimo Lopez, where he's actually not undisputed.
Yeah, because Devin Haney has like the franchise belt. Devin Haney has like the current belt, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's just boxing political nonsense that's gotten in the way over there. But that's neither here nor there. Joshua Taylor has done an amazing thing. He holds all four belts now. It was an exciting fight. I mean, it was pretty close, but then he scores two knockdowns,
which
kind of sealed the deal.
Yeah, exactly. I think the knockdowns were what ultimately like won him on the cards.
And he has a lot of options now as a unified champion. I mean, he can stay and defend those belts, which is hard to do.
Yeah.
Because all of these bodies have mandatory challengers.
Yeah.
Okay, or he can look to move up and fight Terrence Crawford at 147, who's a four-belt holder.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting big-money fight. I could see the appeal there for that. But I mean, look, Taylor did an amazing thing. And he's a great fighter, right? But I can see you want to say something.
Yeah,
what do you want to say?
I don't know. I think it might just be a little bit too much, you know? I think
Terrence Crawford?
Crawford or Spence or any of those guys, honestly.
I got a little. We're actually wrong. It's not six or seven. It's five or six if you count Lopez.
Five or six.
Okay. Yeah, and that's just men. If you don't, if you're just counting the men's division here, because Clarissa Shields obviously holds a ton of belts.
Yeah.
She's the first and only woman, I think, to do that. However, yeah, Jose Ramirez loses the fight. Josh wins it. Terrence Crawford, maybe a bit much. I agree with you. Crawford is bigger.
Longer is really where I think
he And not throwing shade on Josh Taylor's skills, but I think Terrence Crawford just might be
a little, bit
a
better,
little
yeah.
level above. I mean, there's world champions, and then there's like these fighters that come along that are like really, really,
really hard
elite
to beat.
And
yeah.
hard to beat. So,
but hey, everyone, if that's a challenge he wants to accept, though, you can't, like, you know, that's ultimately up to him. If he thinks he can go up there and beat Crawford, more power to you. I'll buy it. I'll watch it. You know what I mean? Like, do I think it's best for his, like, maybe, like, career-wise? I don't know. Like, but. For as far as a good fight, it's a good fight.
It would be a great fight. I mean, and Crawford, of course, unified the belt at 140 as well and moved up. So, people that don't know that history,
blueprint.
He's not the 47 unified champ, but he did the same thing. He unified the belts, and then they got scattered.
Well, it's because nobody at 47 will fight each other.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, it's tough to do it, you know. I mean, let's go a little bit through the list here so people can respect this a little bit. Like, most people think that the four-belt era in boxing is generally accepted to begin in 2007 because that's when people started taking the WBO a little bit more seriously.
Yeah.
But the truth is the WBO was founded in 1988. The belt has been around a long time. It just, for whatever reason, wasn't that well respected.
Yeah.
Okay, but Bernard Hopkins fully unified the middleweight division in 2001, and he was like the only real person that's been able to do much with it because he defended all four belts six times. Which is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah.
And then when he lost, it was a controversial split decision.
Yeah.
I mean, that was in 2005 to Jermaine Taylor.
Yeah.
So that was the most anybody's done in, like, the four-belt era. Because Taylor, he couldn't defend all of them.
Yeah.
He wanted the rematch with Hopkins, which you can't really blame him for at the time.
Yeah.
And, of course, IBF, it was, had a mandatory challenger, so they stripped him and then he gave up the WBA later and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But then you got Crawford in 2017, won the full crown, put all four belts together. I think, who did he beat? In Dongo? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And but he didn't defend it either.
He
just moved up to welterweight after that to 147, where he's been ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And then our boy that we've been talking about the past few weeks, we don't talk about him doing this, but Alexander Usyk.
Yeah.
Did that at Cruiserweight, and he held it from July 2018 through March 2019, so it wasn't that long.
Yeah.
But he vacated everything to move up for the fight with Anthony Joshua,
yeah.
which ties into this conversation because that fight is now basically back on.
Yeah. You mean back off?
Back off, back on.
I don't know.
So, and then if you count Teofimo Lopez, but it's a little bit weird. He hasn't made any defenses yet of the titles he unified against Lomachenko. But then there's that weird thing with Haney also having a belt in that division. So
I think him and Haney need to fight.
But that's it. Those are the guys that have done it.
Yeah.
So Josh Taylor joins that very elite group. And I'm stoked to see what he does next.
Yeah, me too.
Since we brought it up, let's talk a little bit about Usyk and the heavyweight division.
Yeah.
Because all of these things that have gone on with Deontay Wilder winning arbitration against Tyson Fury, forcing the third fight,
mm-hmm.
which has now been confirmed here in Las Vegas for when?
July 24th.
Okay. I know they've reserved Allegiant Stadium for it, but they haven't got it confirmed in there yet. But that leaves Anthony Joshua without a dance partner,
mm-hmm.
which brings the aforementioned Usyk back into the picture because he took step-aside cash to fight for an interim belt against Joe, what's his name?
Joe
I can't remember. Not important. it's not important because that fight's off now.
Yeah,
and Usyk is saying, well, now we need to go ahead and do this this rematch. And so is, I think it's the WBC that has that belt, WBA, whoever it is.
Yeah.
They're demanding it too. So most likely we're going to have Usyk now fighting Joshua, which is what he vacated all four titles to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have Wilder, Fury 3 happening. So let's talk about the Usyk-Joshua fight first. Paul, what are your thoughts on Usyk's chances if this fight goes down against Anthony Joshua?
I think Usyk could win that fight, honestly. I think he could for sure. I think he's like the dark horse, honestly. Like, I think he beats Joshua. I think he beats, maybe even beats Wilder. I think the only person nobody beats is Tyson Fury. He's just too big.
And skilled.
Yeah.
I mean, Wilder's a big dude too, but he doesn't have that skill.
And he's still not, in comparison, he's still not a big dude compared to freaking...
I know, Tyson Fury's 6'9", Wilder's what, 6'5"?
Yeah, and Tyson Fury weighs 280 pounds. Yeah, and fucking Deontay Wilder weighs 210 pounds. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah, very true. So, you think that's what's going to happen? You think Usyk's going to beat Joshua and spoil the whole...
I think Usyk's going to beat Joshua, and I think Fury's going to beat Wilder, and then it's going to set up
Fury. The dynamics, the visuals on that fight would be interesting because Usyk coming up from cruiserweight is smaller,
yep,
shorter than your average heavyweight.
For sure.
And Fury is bigger than your average heavyweight.
Exactly.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
So that would be interesting to see. I'll agree with you on one thing for certain, because what you said, what you didn't say is that that also means that Joshua Fury for all four belts is dead. I think it is. The fight is never going to happen now. That was the moment Wilder came in, well, frankly, and fucked it up.
Here's the thing. I saw this, like, obviously you can't take these motherfuckers for face value when they're talking shit, right? But, like, Fury was talking about that he'll fight Wilder and turn around and fight Joshua back-to-back, that he'll just take Wilder out and then freaking turn around and fight Joshua in 2 months after that. If that happened, like, that'd be ridiculous.
How are they going to get around Usyk with that, though? I mean, I know Joshua...
He's already took the step aside, Bunny, and it was already set up for August. So let's just say it's, what, July? So let's say they push it to September. Gave him a month to train back. Well, you know.
I think that's unnecessarily risky.
It is, but
I wouldn't
be against
it, and that's the only way that fight gets saved, because I don't think that it's so hard to make these big fights. And it counts on so many variables now. Joshua would have to beat Usyk, and then of course we all think that Fury's probably going to beat Wilder pretty handily.
Yeah, I do.
But then everybody has to make an agreement again, and they have to find a new location and a new date, and make sure that Saudi money didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, true.
And nobody else throws up some other mandatory challenger into the mix, and all four sanctioning bodies are still going to be A-okay.
Everyone,
and I think
that's
too much.
Everybody, go ahead and take a break.
It's too much, dog.
Take a break.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, you guys. You know, holidays are coming in 4 months. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and take the next 5 months.
Yeah, Christmas break, and then somebody wants to act. No, nope. Somebody's gonna get hurt in training camp or in gym.
Don't even say that.
I'm just saying, it came and it went. It's a bummer. Hopefully, though, we can still get a fight for the unification.
Unified belt, yeah.
That's what I'm most concerned with. It's
not because
Joshua
the issue.
Himself.
Yeah.
It's who's holding those three belts, fighting the lineal and single belt holder. Please, that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. That would really, really, really be
fun. What's Tyson Fury unified champion?
Yes, and then all the belts, of course, went to the wind. I don't know why he wasn't on that list I just read.
That's what I was just gonna say. He's unified champion, and so was
maybe he didn't have the four belt, the fourth one.
Could have swore he did. And wasn't a fucking homeboy too?
I think I got that list off a bad left hook, so I didn't do a lot of research into it. You know what I mean? It's kind of a spur of the moment.
I got you.
Look up. But you're right. Tyson Fury did have all the heavyweight belts. I mean, he was the last one. And of course, Mike Tyson had the belts back in the day, but I don't think they had four. He only had three. I'm pretty
really?
Certain that's what it is.
Yeah, because Klitschko had two.
Right. Well, if that was left out, is my bad.
You fucker, you.
I know. That's what I get for being high and just checking one source in the middle of a podcast. All right, let's check it out real quick. But
yeah, I do want to see because I think that.
Do you think we'll be able to score tickets if it's at Allegiant Stadium?
If it's
they'll have some
stadium,
cheap seats
maybe,
at Allegiant
yeah.
Stadium that we could.
I don't know, dude. I tried to look up tickets to a Broncos game at Allegiant Stadium, dude. That shit was like $334 a seat for like nosebleeds.
Is the WBA super title, the IBF, the WBO, the IBO, and the ring heavyweight titles that he won.
So what's that?
Maybe it was something to do with it being the WBA super. Maybe there was another WBA heavyweight champ running around. But, yeah, that's four titles, though. Yeah. Five if you count the ring. But that's why, you know, listeners, if you look up this Josh Taylor fight and you see pictures of him holding five belts, it's because one of them is the ring belt,
yeah.
which is prestigious, but it's not officially counted as
a title. I don't understand why
title.
It's not counted.
Me neither, because it's not a joke. It's not like a – that shit's been around forever. You know, but anyways – so, yeah, that list was a little bit inaccurate, but let's hope that we at least get Fury versus Usyk and or Joshua still.
Yeah.
So
that's the fights that still need to happen. Like, I don't know. I just hope it doesn't – even in ultimate – I hate to do this to Usyk, but I kind of wish Joshua would beat him just so we could get Joshua and Fury.
I kind of do too, but – I liked Usyk at Cruiser, but I don't know about heavyweight. We'll see.
Man, he looked pretty nasty.
He did.
You know what I mean?
He put some hurtings out, but
yeah.
He's a tough motherfucker.
He is.
Well, that's not all the boxing, though. Let's move on to the next. How about this Pacquiao versus Spence fight that got
yeah.
announced? Earl Spence taking on Manny Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao, 2 years out of the kit.
Jeez,
out of
yeah,
the
2019.
Ring.
He's officially the champion in recess now, which is this weird new thing they created, too, instead of stripping him.
Which kind of sucks because Spence could pick up the other belt. But I think he still can.
I don't know how they're going to play that
yeah.
out. Does he get the champion in recess belt?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. But it's a good fight for Earl Spence, if you ask
yeah.
me. I don't know if Manny Pacquiao is going to be able to hang.
I don't think so.
I mean, Earl Spence is an amazing, amazing boxer. And
yeah,
Manny Pacquiao is 42 years old.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he lost that split decision to Jeff Horn, controversy or not, and then Jeff Horn got smoked. I mean.
Yeah, by Terrence Crawford.
Exactly. Like, I think Earl Spence is going to have a big, 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 big name on his resume after this. And Pacquiao, maybe go chase an exhibition with Floyd?
Yeah, right.
I mean, how long does he keep fighting? I mean, if he loses here, does he keep going? I mean, you don't have anything to prove. He's.
Yeah.
First ballot Hall of Famer.
Without a doubt.
An amazing, amazing champion.
Yeah.
What do you got left? I mean, you know, box till you're 44 and keep. I hate it when that happens because then they go on these losing streaks, you know.
Yeah.
Be an interesting fight, though. That wasn't the only fight that got announced, though, was it? Was there anything else?
Yep, that was the fight.
Pacquiao versus Spence, Wilder Fury 3, and we're waiting on Usyk versus.
Joshua. But we'll see on that one. That one's still kind of in the works.
Well, Paul, I think it's time for our news outside the cage.
Okay.
A few interesting things going on. I mean,
yeah. Some good.
There's a topic, Paul, that went down that we could do probably 2 hours breaking down the nonsense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But we have to talk about, once again, Diego Sanchez, former UFC fighter, and his now former coach, Joshua
Guru.
Fabia. I'm sorry, Guru. God. Joshua Fabia. All right, so what happened first? We had Sanchez come out and make a statement, basically. And what was that, Paul? That he's severing ties,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just basically
he's like, that's
it's over.
But he doesn't really elaborate on that. He's
yeah.
just like, I've ended my professional relationship with Joshua Fabia.
Yeah.
And apparently Fabia had power of attorney over him. Did you catch that in the statement?
Yeah.
The lawyer said any power of attorneys held by Fabia are now no longer, are null and void.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about that for a second. You know how crazy that is?
That makes sense, though, because they were getting ready to fucking file a lawsuit against the UFC.
So finally, Diego Sanchez appears to have awakened to what everybody's been telling him. This crazy fucker is taking advantage of you. You need to bounce. Yeah. He does it, but now he's maintaining radio silence. Well, Fabia comes out, does not maintain radio silence, goes on some show I never heard of, but it doesn't really matter because everybody picked up his comments, where he is just firing shotgun blasts at Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
I mean, like, fucked up things you shouldn't be bringing up. Like, he's talking about... What, he implied that Diego's mentally retarded. He said that when he asked Diego about education in front of the lawyers, that Diego said that he was in special ed and that was a huge warning to Joshua Fabia that he didn't know that Diego's mental capacities were all the way down at the special education level. Oh, in other words, he's implying Diego's fucking dumb, right? He said that Diego had substance abuse problems. He said he was addicted to, check this out, kratom. Kratom. Addicted to kratom. Legally available in smoke shops all across the United States for pain relief. Okay. And then he said 30 other substances Diego was addicted to.
Which were?
He didn't name any of those. Then he came out and said basically that Diego was a shitty father, but not in so many words. Dude, like, he said that he helped Diego through a divorce, but then this other red flag was that after the divorce, Diego went and he got a one-bedroom condo, even though he has a child. And he thought that that was just maybe a super temporary thing, but then it wasn't. And that was a red flag, according to Fabia. So, I mean, the implication right there is he's a shitty guy who didn't want to take care of his child. And then he said that Diego has a history of sexual abuse. Dude, this is in one interview.
Jesus.
Yeah. No proof.
See, I don't like that.
Any of these things, right? Yeah, and I'm not saying any of these things happened. This is a crazy person.
That's nuts, dude.
Who went out and is now firing shotgun blast accusations. I mean, the whole gambit of everything.
Yeah.
Like, you're a shitty father. You're fucking dumber than a tree stump.
Yeah.
You're fucking, you got a history of sexual abuse, either doing it or having it done to you. One of the two. He didn't elaborate. You're addicted to all kinds of drugs. Oh, then he said he was broke. He said that he drives around a Mercedes that's only worth $3,000, and he should have taken that as a red flag. But when he asked Diego about it, he implied that he was simply being frugal. So then he says he moved in with Diego to help him with everything. But then it was just too much. So when this dude is like the biggest asshole I've ever seen.
Lord.
I mean, he swoops in, he takes advantage of Diego for 2 years. Diego finally wakes up, and then he just goes out. What more bad things can you say?
I don't know if I believe any of that.
Oh, no, I'm not saying, I seriously doubt any of that shit is true, bro.
I mean, maybe a couple things, but, like, ultimately, like, the worst of it can't be true. That's fucked up.
This is
and if
guy,
it is, that's fucked up for him to put that out into the public. That's just mean.
I mean, he's made up things about everything. He also said that Dana White and Sean Shelby were banging all of the fucking women in the UFC, which you know that's not happening. I guarantee you that is not occurring. Not happening. So, I mean, he's full of crazy accusations.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody listening to this to think that any of the things that I said are just true. This is just what the level of scum that this human being is, that he will go on a show and label, just throw the wildest accusations out about a guy who is eccentric and too trusting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my opinion of Diego Sanchez. You're weird. Nothing wrong with that. It's not a knock. And you're super trusting, bro.
True.
So it'd be really interesting, I think, to see if Diego takes this public or...
Or what happens,
I mean, those are crazy, crazy accusations. I don't think you just let that slide when you, someone comes out and says all that.
That's true.
So that's the insanity, drama, soap opera nonsense that happened outside the cage. But what's another thing that happened this week? Paul is kind of monumental in the MMA world, I guess.
Yeah. Paul Felder announced on the broadcast on Saturday night that he officially retired from fighting. That's So good luck to him.
155 pound. Pretty steady in the top 10.
Yeah. He just said that, I guess, like, he just doesn't have the fire anymore, which is good for him. If you don't have the fire anymore, I wouldn't want to see him in the cage, you know? That's not somewhere you ever want to be, you know what I mean?
No, this isn't
a
sport.
He's got so much shit going for him outside already. He already does all the UFC, like, tonight, UFC commentary, all that shit. So you know he's getting paid pretty good for that.
And he's 37 years old, which is young in life. And young in the heavyweight division and old in the lightweight division. So it's not that big
of a shocker.
Straight
killers in that division that he would have to fight to get there.
And he winds up with a record of 17-6, which is very respectable. He had 10 knockouts, 3 subs. You know, he only got knocked out one time in his career. His other 5 losses were all by decision. You know, he's very, very tough. I mean, he goes out on back-to-back losses, but I mean, it was a split decision loss in both of them. Yeah. I mean, he loses a split decision to Dos Anjos.
Yeah, both the fights were good fights.
And that was on short notice, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like I think 7 days, 8 days or something.
Yeah, you can't even count that. That when you take a short notice fight and do a massive weight cut and then lose a split decision.
And he's always had, like, you know, kind of issues weight cutting.
Yeah, he has. He's a bigger guy. You know, and then before that, he loses a split decision to Dan Hooker. And there's, I mean, so close. He could have gone on. That would have been a 4-fight win streak if both those go his way.
Yeah.
You know, he has wins over Edson Barboza, James Vick. He's the last guy to beat now UFC champion, lightweight champion, Charles Oliveira.
Yeah.
I mean, he TKO'd that motherfucker back in 2017.
Yeah.
You know, he's had a good career. He's done very respectable things. So, you know, that Edson Barboza victory he's got was a... He lost to Edson back in 2015, so, I mean, he got a loss back on there, which is pretty cool. And I like his commentary, man.
Yeah, I think he's one of the better commentators we have.
I do, too. I do, too.
Well, in other news, Jake Paul is officially leaving Triller. He's now signed with Showtime Sports for $10 million to fight.
This is shocking to me, dude. I mean, I have mixed feelings about this because in life, outside of this show, I'm an entrepreneur. I work for myself. And I really have respect for people that manage to do things they shouldn't be able to do and turn it into big money. And if he was doing what he's doing in any other field, I would probably think that's pretty cool just from the aspect of what you're managing to accomplish and the money you're managing to make. It just rubs me wrong that it's occurring in combat sports. It chaps my fucking ass that real fighters can't get paid shit. And this joker who has not even fought a single boxer is making more money than guys who've devoted their life to the sport are making. That part of it chaps my ass.
Yeah. Seems like the Tommy Fury fight's going to happen.
I think Tommy Fury would smoke this. If he beats Tommy Fury, I'd have to give him some respect. Tommy Fury's a legit fighter. He's 8-0. He comes from a fighting family. He's been boxing since he was young.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not Nate Robinson.
Yeah.
He's not KSI.
And he's actually Jake's size.
Did you see Jake Paul? I didn't even see it. I just read it because I can't give it the click. Yeah. But I saw that he was apparently trying to start shit with Cody Garbrandt.
And Garbrandt been talking shit back and forth for like months.
Soaking wet, Garbrandt's like 155 pounds.
Yeah, I know. He like walks around 150 pounds.
Why are you picking on guys who outweigh by 50 pounds, bro? He's and no one seems that. To call him on
no
it.
No one does. Yeah.
Okay, $10 million, Showtime. I mean, who's he gonna fight? How long will this last?
We'll see.
Is it for one fight? Is it a one-fight deal? Do you know any details on it?
I don't know how many fights it was, but they were saying it's $10 million a fight because I guess he went to Triller and gave them an opportunity to match, and the head of Triller was like saying that once he said $10 million, we knew we couldn't pay him that, so we had to let him walk.
Well, yeah, let's talk about Triller then. They can't pay Jake Paul because Triller don't have no money. Triller overbid for this Teofimo Lopez fight, which is going to tank because, like we talked about Last episode, I believe it was, they're putting it up against like three other events,
yeah,
including
like
a pay-per-view.
Yeah, and then also
they raised the price,
music and all that stuff.
They're adding music acts to it, which they said they wouldn't do. It's supposed to be for boxing purists, and then they jacked the price to $59.95.
Yeah,
good luck. And you could tell by their reaction when they're crying about their pay-per-views being lost on the Jake Paul shit.
Yeah,
they did that ridiculous like, turn yourself in and pay the $59 or whatever, and we won't come after you, which is an absolute joke that like, clearly didn't work. Like, man, I'm sorry. If anybody listening actually went and paid Triller for your pirated stream, you got conned big time.
Yeah.
And now what? Like, now they're doing this crap. Like, they definitely couldn't pay him. I don't know what Showtime's going to do when Jake Paul gets smoked by a real fighter.
Yeah.
But real boxer, I should specify.
Yeah.
That's some interesting stuff, though, man. I don't know. I don't know.
I never know with those guys. You know, like, you can never really tell when they're serious or what's really going on. They're all over the place. That's all I know.
Well, I don't like that shit. I honestly, no offense to Teofimo Lopez, I hope that that shit sinks and Triller goes away.
And well, I mean, ultimately, they're just a company that bid for his fight, and they took the bid. You know,
way
like
overbid.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it really doesn't do anything for him because he's not signed to, like, a promotion. You know what I mean? He's kind of like a free-flowing, like, there's a few guys like that in boxing, you know, that can work with a bunch of different companies because they're not really tied down to any other ones, you know?
Well, how about ending this segment and the show on some promising news in the world of mixed martial arts and cannabis for our final bit of news outside the cage? Florida, right, has officially stopped testing boxers and MMA fighters for weed.
There we go.
It's about time.
Yeah, right.
They said, from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the only way that they would be testing someone for weed is if, like, basically if you show up to the cage or the ring and your eyes are bloodshot and there's a cloud fucking following you outside and your trunks reek of fucking cannabis, they're going to be like, what the hell, dude?
Are
you retarded? And they're going to test you.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
I think that's basically the condensed version.
Yeah. Ultimately, if you appear to be high, then maybe. But, like, it's not like at a competition and all that shit is, they're not going to test anymore.
Well, this is a good thing. It's about time because it's not performance enhancing.
No.
Performance enhancing. And it is great for recovery. You know, there was a recent study done within the past 12 months. It was a poll of 170 mixed martial artists where basically 46% of them in the poll said that they use marijuana either recreationally or medically after fights or during training, you know, outside of competition, which is a pretty high number because I guarantee you there's a few that didn't admit it.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, that's almost 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fairly good sample size at 170 for the smaller, you know, world of mixed martial arts. And out of that same group, it was like 75% said they use CBD.
That makes a lot of sense.
So it's good for Florida to recognize this because it's not fair, you know, in case you're listening to our show and you don't understand about marijuana in your system, like it can stay in your system for up to 30 days. So I mean, you could smoke a joint and 10 days later, go to your fucking fight and then you're failing for drugs. Like it was an unfair application of the law. Yeah, absolutely. It's happened to a lot of fighters. Look at Nick Diaz.
Yeah.
I mean, all kinds of fighters have gone through all kinds of nonsense that won't have to deal with that, at least in Florida. And hopefully other commissions and states will see this and copy it. So,
yeah, for sure.
Good news on the cannabis side and the combat sports side.
All right, so I think that about wraps up our news outside the cage segment for today.
Well, then joining us next is going to be Fierce Fighting Championship dual weight champion Desmond Monobot.
Okay, joining the show right now, we've got MMA fighter Desmond Monobot. Desmond, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely, our pleasure. Listen, I want to just jump right into it, if you don't mind. We just got done watching your 135-pound title fight in the Fierce Fighting Championships. But before we talk about that, we also have learned that you are their current 155-pound champion as well.
45. We called it lightweight, but I fought for the 45 belt.
Okay. That makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah. Like, damn,
yeah, the announcers on the fighting championship have said it was 55. So you're currently their dual weight champion.
Correct. Back in October, they did offer me the 55 belt against this kid named Cole Frost on like 2 weeks' notice. And then we took it. And then I believe their state went into emergency shutdown. And then when they rescheduled it, he pulled out. And then that's when they offered me the 45 belt. But they originally offered me the 55 belt too.
Okay, so this was a short notice fight as well.
No, kind of. So back in October when they offered it, before everything shut down, that was like on, I want to say like 13 days notice. And then in January, it got COVID, like the whole house got COVID. Okay. And then throughout all that process, the fight was still on. Like, the promotion didn't know. The only people who knew I had it was, like, my team and my family and them. Mm-hmm. And then throughout all that, my dad ended up dying, like, 2 weeks before the fight. Right. So once he died, I was sparring the next day. And then, like, everyone in my team were, like, just, like, basically like that brotherhood kept me going and like kept me pushing, because like after he died, I had like a crossroads path because my coach wanted me to pull out, but I was like, nah, like there's no point, like he's gone now, so like what's the point? So after that we did the funeral the next week, and then we fought that Saturday, and then I don't even think the promoter knew till like the day of.
Wow, Desmond. Well, our deepest condolences on the loss of your father. That's an amazing strength to go ahead and do that. And then you come through and you win the fight as well.
Correct.
Did you win? I haven't been able to see that. Did you win by decision or was it a stoppage?
No, I won by a unanimous decision on the scorecards. It was 50-45 on all of them. It was, like, another shutout, but, like, my conditioning wasn't up to, like, where this fight was. Like, the fighter now would have destroyed the fighter, like, a couple months ago.
Well, let's talk about the next fight then, which is for the 135-pound title in Fierce mm-hmm. Fighting Championships, which was just earlier this month in May of 2021, correct?
Yes.
And that was versus their current champion. It was Noah De La Caldaza, correct?
So... it was a vacant belt, but they were like promoting it like he was the champion, or like he okay. was like some ground wizard that was going to take me down, submit me. That's how they were promoting it. And I was getting like text messages like, this is going to be a good fight for you, like a good test for me. And then it was a complete shutout.
Yeah. One thing we noticed like throughout the fight was just your composure throughout it, just like your ability to not only mix things up, but just like, to stay composed and make sure, like, even, like, you could see, like, between rounds and stuff, he was trying to, like, kind of irk you, you know, like, between, like, play into the camera and stuff like that. But you were just able to just stand in there and just completely take over throughout the fight. Tell us a little bit about, like, going into, like, that training camp. Did you work on those leg kicks, the body shots, or is that just something that you feel like has evolved in your game?
Both. So we worked on it a lot more this camp, but I've always liked the calf kick better than like the IT band when it comes to wrestlers, at least, because like when you kick it, with the IT band, when you kick it, they can catch it, take the single and just do that. But with the calf kick, it's hard, and then you can fake it, come up with the hands. It's just a harder kick to do. And then like those couture guys, they don't really work on their striking that well. I mean, they do, but like, it's not to the level at our gym where it's at. We're like constantly like going over it and then constantly doing that. And then like he wasn't checking the metal, which really surprised me, because it doesn't take much to check it with the orthodox southpaw. You just got to turn your leg out.
Yeah.
You showed a lot in that fight. We've both seen it twice now. And I just want to mention a few things. Your use of the switch stance was really impressive, especially on entry.
Mm-hmm.
Is that is something that I haven't seen a lot of in amateur fighting, and frankly, not a whole lot of in pro level fighting. That was really high level stuff. Obviously, you've got a great right hand. And one thing that I talk about on this podcast a whole lot is MMA fighters not utilizing their jab. Coming from a boxing background, it's just a big pet peeve of mine. And I just got to tell you, Desmond, your jab was incredible in both stances. I mean, you're feinting with it. You're going to the body. You're using it on entry to set up your rights. Just what kind of boxing are you doing? Do you have a history in boxing?
I don't. So the only boxing coach I had was Derek Kimke, which was like, he's the main boxing coach at the school I fight at now. And then my main sparring partner is, his striking style is more boxing. But like, he's super fast and he switches a lot and he moves a lot. So I just picked that up from like sparring. So I used to get my ass beat a lot from him when using his speed. He would cut angles a lot. And then I was just asking questions. And then over time, it just like my style kind of implemented his, but it's more of a kickboxing style now.
Yeah, you could really tell just like throughout the fight that you just seem so comfortable with the feints and your head movement as well. Like he was saying a little bit too, like your ability to switch stances. I noticed a lot, like, although you do use that jab a lot to feint in, but if you're not using that jab, you're also using that leg kick. And also you hit him with a couple of really, really nice body kicks. That last, I think it was at the end of the third round, you hit him with the spinning back kick to the body, and it was just disgusting. So one thing we do want to talk about as well is, like, so do you, what is, like, your, like, ground level? Like, where did you start as far as MMA? Was it, like, boxing, wrestling, kickboxing?
No, so it was traditional martial arts. Okay. So I started karate when I was four. The reason why was because my mom, when I was little, I looked really skinny. Like, no one fed me. And, like, no one, like, she was afraid I was going to get bullied, like, as I got older. So when she put me in that, and it wasn't one of those karate schools where, like, you get your blood, like, 9 or 10. Hello. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we're okay.
It wasn't one of those where, like, you get your black belts at, like, 9 or 10. Like, it took me, I want to say, like, 16. I was, like, 16, 17 once I got it. So it was,
so you
like,
do have your black belt.
Years of that. Yeah, years of that. And, like, my style was, like, a point fighting style, which transitioned. It was a little hard for the transition into MMA just because, like, the styles were so different. And then, like, once I learned the basics from, like, boxing, Muay Thai, and kickboxing, like, my movement was good too. That's why I switch it a lot, because I was always switching in tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
But like, once I learned the basics, like with the other arts, it was hard for people to stop. Like once I came into my own.
Okay. Yeah, you've got really good movement, both laterally and in and out. And it must come from that background. Yeah. It really shows you've transitioned that well into MMA, because you move like someone who's got a good, like, background in boxing that with that type of movement you see. So kudos on that, man. That's really shining for you right now.
Thank you.
They said on the broadcast, I wanted to ask you, do you train out of a Krav Maga gym? Is that true?
I do. So I train at a Las Vegas Combat Academy. We're going through a rebranding phase right now. But if you Google it on, like, Google Maps or just Maps, it's a Las Vegas Krav Maga mixed martial arts.
Okay. That was a little unusual. You don't hear that too often.
Yeah, like, we're a fight gym, but not a fight gym, if that makes sense. Yeah. So, like, self-defense and fighting, they're, like, they cross paths in, like, the same intersection, but they're completely different in their own respect. But, like, everything that you could do in the street, you should be able to do in the cage or in the ring, like, the same intensity. Obviously, rule sets, like, limit that for you, but it should be the same intensity. We're always playing downhill. We're always striking first and striking hard. Even if it goes to the ground, where, like, it's a different game, but, like, same principles apply.
I like that, for sure.
I like that a lot. So, with the you fighting at 45 and 35, obviously, being a dual weight champion, there's always the idea that, obviously, next is going pro for you. Mm-hmm. After the fight, you did said you wanted to talk to Scott Coker, possibly get in over there. Is that like where you see your career going next, or do you want to take a few more fights, or how do you see that going?
Realistically, my coach was saying we could turn you pro now, but it's just a better look if we get that tough enough belt. Just because everyone who's gotten it has gotten to a major organization like Tracy Cortez, Jalen Bates. The names go on forever. Ronda Rousey, even.
Yeah,
one more belt, then we go pro, because that's 10 fights right over there. And if it's another dominant performance, there's no reason to stay. But back to your original question, I would like to go to Bellator just because I see MMA evolving so much bigger than what it is now. I see it evolving into, like, boxing. Hopefully not into, like, where it becomes more political, if anything. But I see a lot of cross promotions, like a lot of super fights, like with just names, where MMA just becomes, oh, who's fighting this? Like Canelo's fighting this weekend, where it becomes like that for MMA.
Yeah. Well, also another thing is, like, so do you see yourself going in as a 35 or a 45? Where do you see yourself at?
Both, honestly. Both. Yeah. If they, like, because 35, I'm like a little big. 45, I'm a little small. I'm realistically like a 140 guy, but they don't have that. So it's like 35, 45, 55 if it's the right matchup. So,
well, that gives you a lot of options, and you've already got that experience fighting in those multiple weight classes. So you're going to come in, you know, with an advantage, I would think, if you're looking to do that already.
Right. Honestly, like, fighting at those weight classes is the same to me. The only real difference is the weight cut. Because, like, guys at 35 now are almost 6 foot. Guys at 45 are, like, 5'10 at least. So it's like the same thing. It's just like my speed at 35 or my power at 35 kills those guys, and then my speed at 45, they're not used to it.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Desmond, I was just wondering, I noticed on the entry to your fight at 135 for the title, and then after you won the belt, the necklace. Is there any significance to that? Tell our listeners what that's about.
Which one?
It was a big silver one.
Oh, yeah. It goes back to my dad. So I had two necklaces. One of them was a pendant with a turtle on it. When he passed away, I kept dreaming of turtles. And then my mom got it for me. So the black one is his ashes in there. And then the big one he ended up giving to me a while ago. And so it's just, like, it just means a lot more than me. Because I always wore it because it's always a symbol for, like, safe travels and all that. But now it just means that much more to me.
Well, yeah, that's really important and significant, and that's great. You can have that with you when you won these titles. That's awesome. I'm sure your father would be very, very proud of you.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to your next fight. So we would definitely like to know if you do wind up in Tough Enough, or if you get the call and you decide you know how to go early, make sure to let us know, and we're going to let all of our listeners know as well. And go ahead and tell everybody listening where they can learn more about you, like your Instagram handle, Twitter, anything that you've got.
So you guys can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. They're the same ones. It's Dezzy Fresh 702 is DEZZY, and then Fresh and then 702.
Okay, great. Well, everybody, go check him out. We really enjoyed your fight. We're looking forward to the next one. Congratulations again on being a dual title holder. That's a great entrance here as you're looking at going pro. I don't think it could get any better, right, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot. We'll see you on the next one, okay?
See ya.
Bye.
Well, I think that was a really great interview, Paul.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to where he goes from here. You know, watching his last two fights, he looks like, you know, he's ready for that next level. So we'll see.
He is. I hope he does manage to get signed by Bellator. I don't think he needs to really F around with some of the lower level, like Legacy or some of the others. Like,
he's,
I think he would
notch.
Be fine making the jump straight to Bellator. I mean, they've invested in other fighters, like, with less skill, like a Dylan Danis, for example, who might have more skill in one particular field of jiu-jitsu, but clearly has a lot to work on in his game, where Desmond is ready to go.
Yeah, 100%.
That was great. Can't wait to catch his next fight. Hopefully it's here in Vegas at Tough Enough with the crowd available and we can go to it.
That'd be sick.
And if so, we'll definitely let everybody know when that's upcoming.
Yeah. Well, I think that about wraps our show up for the day.
I think so, Paul. It's been a good one. Thank everybody for listening. If you're brand new to the show and you're wondering when, where, and how to listen to us, we are on KLVM Radio. We are on Tuesday nights at 3 p.m. here on the West Coast. That'll be 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We are also on podcast outlets all over the internet, from Amazon Music to Audible to Spotify, Google, Apple, and all the rest. We have all that information in one spot that's currently being updated, but will be live again soon. Where's it at, Paul?
SWATMA.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, buy a t-shirt, and support the podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
Peace.